U.
Stew.
D.
D.
O.
U. Studio.
That's it.
Right? Studio.
360 with Kurt Anderson.
Kurt Anderson.
Kurt Anderson.
I listen to it on the radio in my car.
Oh, don't be sniffy about
it. I'm not being sniffy.
I think you are.
No.
You've got a nose for it.
Oh, gosh. Wow. What are you saying over there?
Today on the show,
first I'm finding where the beat begins.
I think that's what's helped me, is realizing that everyone is laughing at you.
It's that collision point where your heart opens up.
Keep listening. Stay right there. Don't go anywhere. Stay. Sit.
これからみんなでめちゃくちゃ踊って騒ごう騒ごう。
ヘッベンガ。
Jace Clayton is a DJ, but he's not the kind of DJ you hire for your wedding or your kid's bar mitzvah. He's DJ Rupture, and as DJ Rupture, he finds connections between songs where most of us just hear a jumble or clashing differences. His mixes, in fact, are so complex, he doesn't spin on the usual two turntable. He uses three. Back in 2001, fresh out of Harvard, he put out a mixtape called Gold Teeth Thief. That thing went viral, and suddenly, Jace Clayton, English major, was pretty major on the global dance scene. And he's remained so. A few years ago, my producer and I visited him at his home in Brooklyn. We walked into a living room that was absolutely piled with records and books, and concert posters covered the walls. It seemed perfect. So, Jace Clayton, thanks for letting us into your apartment.
Thank you.
DJing, for the probably majority of our listeners who have no idea really what that means other than playing records, explain the craft at your level of it a little bit.
Yeah, something that's really important to me as a DJ is the idea of the mix, but at a very technical level. So there's this thing called beat matching, which is when you sync the tempo of one song to the tempo of another one. And that means you can then slowly fade between them, superimpose them, and it sounds like one record.
So two songs that do not have the same beat, you essentially by hand make them mergeable.
Exactly. Yeah, so you're adjusting the speed on one, slowing it down, speeding it up, stopping it, and maybe adjusting the EQs and getting to the point where you're like, okay, now this record can fit tempo-wise with this other record, and so then a mix can begin.
Well, we have your big industrial strength turntables over here, so let's go see what you do with them.
So I'm going to start off. This is queuing up. First, I'm finding where the beat begins.
By literally just with your hand,
yep,
flipping it back and forth till it gets to that moment.
Yep. And so in a club, I'd be listening, doing this via headphone and listening in, say, okay, and matching it with another record that's already playing. But that's, so this is, again, this is the record as it ordinarily would play. Very boring. So I'm like, okay.
Very slow, certainly.
Yeah. See, yeah. Now I like a little more bounce. So here we go. I switch it to 45. And now that's more like a hip-hop tempo. So then I take this a cappella I have by Kelly Rowland. And if I were just to play this straight, she was actually singing slow. So if you just take these on, if you're playing them off CD, this would be, this Mark one we're listening to would be very slow, and then the Kelly would also be a bit slow. But what we can do in the with the turntables is, first I find the beginning of the Kelly. That's the beginning of it, but since I know it's slow, I move this slider with the pitch adjust. Wait until the top of the beat.
And then you catch it at the right moment.
Exactly. Drop it in. It's a little fast, so I'm just slowing the record with my hand, pushing the pitch down. Here we go, and now they're more or less a little bit fast. And this is an a cappella I know really well, so I'm kind of envisioning how it should sound and trying to make it relax, match up with that.
So how and when did you start doing this?
It's funny, when I was in college, I had a radio show as a DJ. And that was my first introduction to it. But I didn't start DJing, as a mixer and until I heard this music called Jungle, drum and bass. And it was stunning. You know, it was fast. It was very creative. It was drawing on reggae and hip hop and elements of techno, but all together in this end. And I was thinking, okay, in order to get access to that music, you kind of have to be a DJ, because it was only circulating then primarily as 12-inch records. And I was just so into it. I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go out and like get turntables and a mixer and learn how to do this so I can get into the stream of this exciting jungle music.
And when you started calling yourself DJ Rupture, was that all about that digital buzzword?
No, this was, you know, not pre-digital, but back in 95, I came up with that name. And so that was thinking back to these relatively boring Boston dance floor where it'd be one tempo, one style of music all night long. And I just felt that didn't reflect who I was as a musician. And I was like, I want to like rupture that dance floor. I want to dance, like put a big hole in that, you know?
You 19-year-old full of hubris. You could just stay here in this apartment and via the internet find every piece of music from everywhere all the time, but you actually, part of your practice, if you will, is traveling around and finding it in the wild, right?
Yes.
How come?
Definitely. Well, that's where music lives. Like here in New York, like I know what's going on in New York, but I'm so curious about music from many different parts of the world, and being fortunate enough to be able to go DJ all over in various places, I'm always like, what's happening here? Like, what, take me to the little record shop, take me, like, what are the random cab drivers in Morocco listening to versus Brooklyn? Here's a nice example is last spring I was in Casablanca in the Medina, and one day I walked by a stand where a guy's selling like sportswear for women but playing some Berber music. Turns out he had a few CDs for sale. Although we didn't share a language, I'd be like, you know, Hafida, Hafida, I'm looking for this woman, Hafida. So he kept on pulling CDs, you know, over the course of half an hour. He's like, okay, this person clearly knows a lot about this music. And so he pulled out this one CD after asking for all these others and was like, you should check this one out. And it was this group, Imanarin. And it was amazing. Really, really interesting. And like a homemade CD, the guy's phone number on it. And then I was able to go back in June and call up the phone number and eventually meet up with this guy. And this Hassan Wargi is the band leader. And so it was this random moment of being in the store, knowing that they were selling Berber music, asking for enough of the people that the guy was like, okay, I'm going to give you the good stuff, as it were. And then that kind of led into this whole relationship where I've made some music with this guy, Hassan, and it's really kind of unfolded.
I've never heard a better explanation for why people should get out of their basements and off their computers. Since, I mean, you find these musics and in various parts of the world and then put them into your ongoing stew of music. It's sort of world music 2.0 or something, right? I mean, world music meant something when we started hearing that 20 years ago, which was finding individual things. Here, listen to this Brazilian guy. You're doing something different.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, world music 2.0, it's a useful phrase because, yeah, the first version of world music was very like, this is the superstar. This is the guy that the labels are pushing.
If you want a Molly drum, Molly, you know, drummer, this is the guy.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And world music 2.0, it's like, wait a second. You know, they're inexpensive laptops everywhere in the world you go. You know, kids are making beats in internet cafes on their telephones. They're sharing them via Bluetooth, via YouTube, via Facebook. So there's this really unprecedented, amazing growth of musical activity all over the globe. And curious DJs, curious listeners can find it out. It's nothing like the days of the sort of label gatekeepers, let's make a band that can really rock a big festival in Connecticut and it all makes sense. Instead, it's a really fascinating mix between hyper-localized music, but then, you know, the way the internet works, they'll get an audience. There'll be some kids in Frankfurt who are suddenly interested in what these Malian kids are rapping about or their production styles. Kids in South Africa are saying, hey, this new Nigerian dance music, maybe we can think about how that will influence our South African house.
And so that must really be just in the relatively last few years with not only more internet penetration in the developing world, but bigger bandwidth and all that, that has really reached some universal point of global exchange.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. It's the last six years, if that.
You also have been collaborating with other artists, like the poet Elizabeth Alexander, who people probably know because she wrote and delivered this poem for Barack Obama's first inauguration. How did that come about, and why did that come about?
So it feels like a lifetime ago. A while ago, I actually reviewed literature and poetry for places like the Washington Post.
Because you're a Harvard English major.
Yes. and I was living in Madrid at the time, and they were like, yeah, would you like to review a book of Elizabeth Alexander's poetry, the Antebellum Dream Book? And I was like, sure. And I thought it was fantastic. Actually, I'm a big fan of her work, so I was quite happy to do that. A mutual friend put us in touch. So I was like, okay, let's meet. And if we meet, why don't we record a few poems and, you know, try and sketch out something musically? And we met and sort of hit it off. And it was all, yeah.
Heavyweight champion of the world, Mike Tyson, broke his fist in a street brawl in Harlem at 3 a.m. outside an all-night clothing store where he was buying an $800 white leather coat. The other dude on TV said it was a sucker punch. Muhammad Ali said Tyson was pretty enough to be heavyweight champion of the world. Years ago, a new Ali threw his Olympic gold into the Ohio River, said he'd get it when black people were truly free in this country.
And as if you didn't have enough metaphorical plates in the air, you also have a band called Neville.
Yep.
What do you do with them that you can't do otherwise?
Neville. It's a bit more like a kind of electronic chamber music. It's more about listening than
people don't dance.
Yeah, people don't dance. You know, they have a few songs where, but that's not really the goal of it. And then, you know, on stage communication is important, and exploring these sounds and the possibilities of saying, well, let's try and push the software, but do it by having a vocalist do a strange duet with herself, where I'm doing some pulling that voice in the real time and transforming it and things like that.
Chase Clayton, thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Gert. It's been great.
That's Jace Clayton, a.k.a. DJ Rupture. Since we got together and talked 4 years ago, he has published a book called Uproot, Travels in 21st Century Music and Digital Culture, and it's just out. You can see a video of Jace attempting to teach me DJing at studio360.org. Can I do this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Up next, we will hear from a singer with a voice that's right out of the Patsy Cline era, even though she was born in the age of Shania Twain.
Last night I got so drunk I don't know what I did.
Lydia Lovelace performs live in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Studio 360.
Lydia Lovelace grew up on a farm in the middle of Ohio. She actually grew up baling hay and feeding her family's cattle. Then, as a teenager, she played in a band with her father and sisters and developed this old-fashioned-sounding country music voice.
Well, your man sure does look good in those cowboy boots.
It's all kind of a classic country music backstory, but in Lydia Lovelace's music, you can hear other influences. You can hear punk rock, folk, 80s pop. A couple of years ago, I spoke with Lydia Lovelace when her album Somewhere Else had just come out. I'd love it if we could start with a song before we talk.
Yeah.
Maybe Everything's Gone.
I'll do that one first, yeah.
Cool.
Well, I need to find the man.
That was Lydia Lovelace performing Everything's Gone all by herself on acoustic guitar. That's beautiful and a significantly different rendition than is on this record.
You think?
Yeah. I mean, all and sadder. So that's not a that's not a fictional story, right?
No.
Talk about the real story that's about.
That's the problem with that song is I guess it's so much easier for me to write these sort of tragic love songs that I'm not afraid to talk about, but my personal history, I guess, is a little more scary territory.
Well, we'll get into both.
But yeah, I mean, it's about my family for one reason or another losing our home, and it was probably the hardest thing I ever went through.
Did it take a while to be able to sort of digest that as a song after it had happened? Or
yeah. It was, I think, one of the first ones I wrote for somewhere else, and I wrote it and then kind of didn't think about it for, like, months because I just didn't want to or play it for anyone.
Uh-huh.
And I was playing with the band, and we had drums on it, and I think I probably started crying and threw a fit, as I am wont to do. And that's why it ended up being so stripped down, because I didn't really want it to be touched, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So we just did something very simple.
So really, the first time you played it with your band, mm-hmm. you started sobbing, basically?
Yeah.
And now you laugh.
Yes. Well, you have to, I guess.
Back when you were still living on the farm, I've read, you were homeschooled. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And were you homeschooled because parents were sort of former hippies? Mm-hmm. Were you homeschooled because of a Christian thing? What was the motivation?
I guess, yeah, my parents were, you know, religious, but it wasn't like Carrie or anything at the house. So
good. Lucky for you. So then as this girl, 14, 15, you and your sisters and your dad started a band?
Mm-hmm.
So later in your teens, you go out on your own, tour as a solo act. Mm-hmm. But your dad kept playing with you as a drummer?
Yeah, for a long time, yeah.
What were the good things about that?
The good things were just having someone on your team all the time. And we were very locked in musically because we played together for so long.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Were there bad things?
It's hard to be in a van with your dad as a teenager, I think, for anyone.
Partridge Family.
Yeah. I guess that was the thing. I didn't want it to be the Partridge Family.
I'm assuming Lovelace is not your family name. How did you come up with the name Lydia Lovelace?
I guess, I don't know. I like alliteration. And it's like Billy Idol said, he said, making your own name. Well, he said, I gave me my own name, just like everyone else, which the interviewer thought was funny. But he also said, it's not about forgetting your past, what about changing your future? So I guess I just wanted to make a name that would give me kind of a personality.
On your last album, Indestructible Machine, you had lyrics about your social anxiety and difficulty mm-hmm. relating to people. You don't seem so socially anxious or difficult.
I've been hearing that from my therapist.
Really?
He says I seem more relaxed, so I don't know. Maybe
you're cured.
Yeah, I'm better.
Well, I mean, maybe
it's a Christmas miracle.
No, and an angel got his wings. Maybe, though, it's just turning 23 and not being an adolescent anymore?
I think I just care less than I used to. People say, you know, no one's laughing at you. Well, the truth is everyone is laughing at you. I laugh at all kinds of people that I see doing stupid things. So I think that's what's helped me is realizing that everyone is laughing at you and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
So.
This anxiety thing that you've now cured yourself of, did that make it hard to, like, get up and be a performer? Or
it is really hard. Yeah. But some nights are easier than others. I don't know. Sometimes I just feel better. Sometimes I want to vomit and cry and not talk to anyone or get on stage. But some nights I feel really powerful. So
you've made three albums.
Mm-hmm.
This is your third. And there's been a clear evolution from them, from this sort of straight ahead, like, this girl is a Nashville natural, mm-hmm. to this kind of hillbilly punk, to this more complicated, moody record, mm-hmm. it seems. Do you feel at 23 that you've found your comfortable destination in terms of your mode, your genre?
Sadly, no.
No?
I think that's why I made this album is I guess I have. I know what I want to do. I know I don't want to really push the heavy country thing anymore, but that's always going to be a part of me. But I think I'm just reaching my sort of mental breakdown, early 20s thing. So I don't know what's going to happen next, but I don't think it'll be that different.
Yeah. You won't suddenly be an electronica disco person?
Well, I might have that side project, but yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Before I let you go, now, you've covered songs by Katy Perry and Elvis Costello and one by Kesha, a great version of her song Blind.
Yeah.
Will you play that?
Yes.
Thank you. That's Lydia Loveless playing the song Blind. And her brand new album is called Real. Coming up next, Amanda Palmer strips Radiohead songs right down to the studs on her ukulele.
It gives me a wonderful boundary that I don't usually have, which is that I have to focus on the subtlety of the song and the lyrics and the singing, which is not generally my specialty. My specialty is usually like loud, bombastic, screaming, dramatic.
2 jumps in a week, I bet you think that's pretty clever, don't you, boy?
That's just ahead in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Flying on your motorcycle, watching.
Studio 360.
The musician and writer and performer Amanda Palmer has not had anything like a traditional career path. She got famous in 2000, founding the band The Dresden Dolls, which pretty much single-handedly invented the genre known as cabaret punk.
Life is full of frog.
progress. She has worked as a stripper. She has played the MC in the show Cabaret in a great production at the American Repertory Theater. A couple of years ago, she published a best-selling self-help book. Another of her left turns was the album called Amanda Palmer Performs the Popular Hits of Radiohead on Her Magical Ukulele.
And there it is, sitting in its own chair over there.
you have had a non-standard career, and maybe there aren't many standard careers left these days. Ukulele covers of Radiohead, I guess, is relatively conventional.
You know, the ukulele, the Radiohead record came about because when I first picked up the ukulele, it was to learn the song Creep, the Radiohead song Creep. And this friend of mine in Boston was throwing a benefit for this Iranian punk band that she was friends with. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if I like hopped up on the bar and played Creep on the ukulele? And it came to me just kind of like as, oh, crazy idea. Let's do this crazy idea. And so I went down the street, bought a ukulele, said, how hard can this be? There's only four strings. I figured out the chords from the internet, and I thought that was going to be it. I thought it was going to be this one-time
party
shtick,
trick,
and it was really this beautiful, wonderful thing. And I actually, my landlord was at the gig with me and was following me with a camera and capturing everybody's facial expressions. People were yelling, and it was just this great moment. And I think I walked away from that experience, and I kind of went, huh. You know, I don't think I'm going to hang this thing up on a wall. I think I could really use this.
And so let's hear the song that began it all. Will you play Creep?
Absolutely.
Thank you. makes you happy. Whatever you want, you're so special. I wish I was special.
That was Amanda Palmer performing the Radiohead song Creep live here in Studio 360. As you say, you're a pianist. As I listened to you and watched you playing the ukulele and singing, your voice, which is amazing, becomes a much bigger part of the performance than when you're playing the piano.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things I really like about the ukulele, and that has also started to make more and more sense to me as I've looked back at why I've really enjoyed it and stuck with it, is that, you know, the piano is very dynamic and it's very dramatic. And with the ukulele, you just can't really play it that loud and aggressively. And so it gives me a wonderful boundary that I don't usually have, which is that I have to focus on the subtlety of the song and the lyrics and the singing, which is not generally my specialty. My specialty is usually like loud, bombastic, screaming, dramatic.
Competing with this giant machine.
Right. Yeah. Well, or and using the giant machine to make a giant noise to make everyone listen and pay attention. But the ukulele has a different kind of really subtle power. It's like delivering the skeleton of the song with nothing else on it.
You also do something interesting with this record. I mean, it is Radiohead, so the songs tend to be kind of morose. and yet it has this funny, campy look, and it has this there's this ecstatic picture of you that is its frontispiece. Are you saying morose is as morose does? Or,
you know, I think that is just kind of the Amanda Palmer special. I really like turning things around like that and twisting things up. And I loved the idea of having this kitschy, campy-looking record where I practically look like Doris Day on the cover with this really kitschy, campy title. But then the minute you put the needle on the record, it's like, oh, wait, I have to take this seriously.
The fact in your Amanda Palmer way that there is a wink going on makes me able to like it in a way that if something is entirely earnestly, self-indulgently, I'm so sad, I can't quite bond to it.
Well, I kind of feel the same way, and my favorite art has always been the collision of those two things. I really, really love when the super light collides with the super dark, because I think it's that collision point where you really your heart opens up and something happens.
When, as a little kid in Lexington, Massachusetts in the 1980s, did you decide, Mommy, I'm a performer?
Oh, I think probably I was about 3.
Really?
From the minute I can remember, you know, I wanted to be the center of attention. I wanted to be on stage. I wanted to be a performer. To me, the holy trinity of my preteen era was Cyndi Lauper, Prince, and Madonna. They were, you know, and they had a lot in common. They were flamboyant. They were, you know, there were costumes. There was drama. There were stories and, you know, and there were crazy videos with plots.
So the theatricality was always appealing to you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
One of my favorite Dresden Dolls songs is Coin Operated Boy. And I want to listen to a little bit of that to remind listeners who perhaps haven't heard it for a while what it is.
Coin Operated Boy. Sitting on the shelf, he is just a toy, but I turn him on and he comes to life. Automatic joy, that is why I want a coin operated boy. Made of plastic and elastic, he is rugged and long lasting. Who could ever
is I mean, not to get too earnest, but is this a feminist song?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think it's a feminist song as much as any song that I write or sing is feminist. You know, this is a lonely song.
But now your loneliness is ending. You're actually engaged to be married.
It's true. It's true. I'm really excited about getting married. I think I found a good one.
To this fellow Neil Gaiman, who's been a guest on Studio 360 in the past.
Yeah, that's him.
And does he bear any resemblance to the coin-operated boy?
No, he doesn't, actually. He has very strong opinions of his own, which is a huge part of why I love him so much.
When Neil was on the show a few years ago, he was talking about his movie at the time, Mirror Mask, which is about a girl who runs away from the circus to join real life. And I want to play a bit of that conversation for you.
She's somebody who makes up stories. It begins with her making up stories with little sock puppets that she has on her feet. And you see that she lives in this wonderful world, which is half fantasy anyway. But thinks she wants real life, but isn't quite sure.
Sounds like you. Sounds A, like in that movie he dreamed you up, and B, like you're kind of entering a real life phase after leaving the circus.
Yeah, a little bit. Or you could look at it the other way around. I'm just entering a different kind
of
circus.
A new fantasy?
Yeah, I'm in it. Thing about me and Neil is we're so different, and yet there are parts of us that are just like so similar. It's frightening.
In artistic sensibilities, if we were drawing a Venn diagram of the two of you, you would overlap some, but not a lot.
I think it's not that simple. I think the places we overlap are our sense of humor and our love of the dark, and that thing we were talking about earlier, like the light and the dark colliding. I think that's also a Neil Gaiman specialty. But where Neil fantasizes other worlds into being and, you know, goes off into very, very, very far away places, I've spent a lot of time focusing on how completely, you know, like uncomfortable I can make people with the amount of detail I'm giving them about my life.
Before you go, will you play another song?
I would love to.
Excellent. Although I should warn parents that this one has some edgy language and content, so it may not be appropriate for younger listeners. And it's called...
Do You Swear to Tell the Truth, the Whole Truth, and Nothing But the Truth, So Help Your Black Ass? It's a lyric from an NWA song.
When I was 6 years old, my sister Allison asked for a stove for her birthday. A miniature one you could actually cook with, and my mom was nice and she bought one. Allison needed a reason to bake something, barged in my room and she grabbed me. She said, I made a cake and we're going next door to Sam Weinstein's and you're getting married. Cake was burned, it tasted gross. She made me kiss him on the mouth.
I usually make some sort of disgusted sound there, but I usually have an audience that's laughing at me.
Now I am 33, unmarried happily, no plans in life, and I'm planning to keep it that way. I do kissing with only one mission. Do you like to kiss? Then you have my permission. And I've already spent too much time doing things I didn't want to. So if I just want to make out all the time, you can bet your black ass that I'm going to. When I was 9, I was kind of a loser. The kids in my class didn't like me. Melanie Chow was the meanest of all, and my mom made me go to her party. nobody talked to me. I sat there quietly drawing with crayons on a napkin. A picture of Melanie skewered with a pitchfork, her legs getting eaten by lions. The cake was good. I took some home. I had a party in my room. Now I have friends and I'm not such a loser, but I go to bars all the time and I sit there and order red wine and I write and I like being alone around people. Yes, that's how I like it. And I've already spent too much time doing things I didn't want to. So if I want to sit here and write and drink wine, you can bet your black ass that I'm going to. Yes, I come here often. Sure, I'll have another one. But I don't have to talk to you. When I was 25, I was a rock star, but it didn't pay too well. I had to strip on the side of the road to get ready for shows. And the cars driving by, baby, they'd never know what a bargain they'd gotten. And if I'm forgotten, I'm perfectly happy with all that has happened. And I still get laughed at, but it doesn't bother me. I'm just so glad to hear laughter around me. And I've already spent too much time doing things I didn't want to. So if I want to dance alone, dress like a pirate, or look like a dyke, or wear high heels and lipstick, or hide in a convent, or try to be mayor, or marry a writer, smoke crack and slash tires, make jokes you don't like, or paint ducks and retire, you can bet your black ass that I'm going to.
That's great. And I hear the NWA influence so distinctly throughout
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of Ice Cube subtlety in there.
Amanda Palmer, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful to talk to you.
Amanda Palmer performs the popular hits of Radiohead on her magical ukulele, is out now. At Studio360.org, you can watch Amanda Palmer play Creep on her ukulele. She has a new album of covers that she recorded with her dad, Jack Palmer. The album is called You Got Me Singing, and it's out right now. I spoke with Palmer back in 2010. She and that novelist guy, Neil Gaiman, after that, got married, toured together, and had a baby boy who is just about to turn one. That's it for today's show. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and I'd appreciate it very much if you did so. Studio 360 is a co-production of WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Our team includes
Jenny Lawton,
Andrew Adam Newman,
Louis Mitchell,
Matt Frasica,
Julia Lowry Henderson,
Krista Ripple,
Tommy Bazarian,
Emily Marinoff,
Kestrel Woldemuth,
Juliet Muller,
Joaquin Kotler,
and I'm Kurt Anderson. Thank you for listening.
PRI, Public Radio International.
Next time in Studio 360, the comedian Aparna Nancherla went to high school with a bunch of geniuses.
Some of them didn't have the social skills to, like, remember to wear two shoes every day. But they had, like, the ability to create a robot that would do it for them. Like, they were very advanced.
We're going back to school next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.